This is Bart Baggett. I am president of Hammond University. I appreciate you being on this introductory conference call. This is a fabulous opportunity to learn about handwriting analysis and the hiring process. This is one of nine preview calls we've had this year before the conference, which actually happens in just one week and a couple of days, in Dallas. So if you have not signed up or haven't decided to come to Dallas, we have a couple of special events, including a preview of a movie about O.J. Simpson, who really killed Nicole Brown Simpson. And that's a special event, Gina, we just added for Friday night. So we're going to have a lot of special surprises there. So we'll be talking, Gina is one of our faculty, and she's here in just 1 minute. And, of course, if you don't know me, I have was a co-founder of Hanover University. We now have schools in China and India, our home study courses throughout U.S., and we do at least one conference a year. This is our big conference coming up this year, which has an advanced tone. I got to tell you, I just have finished up the advanced dictionary as part of the section, and it's really amazing. There's stuff that's just not published in any other book that we get to talk about, including Dawn's going to teach us how to spot if someone is going to have a boy or a girl just from their handwriting if they're pregnant. So all kinds of cool little bonuses that probably aren't in other books. So tonight's call is with a friend of mine named Gina Branch. Gina is a handwriting expert. She originally started going through our handwriting analysis program, got certified. She's also recently become a handwriting expert in the field of forensic document examination, which means she gets paid $1,000 a day to go to court and testify about handwriting. And, Gina, you're a heck of a business person. So welcome to the call.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, we've got 200 people registered. Usually not everyone shows up, so there's lots of people with questions, including some questions which were emailed in, which we can get to as we move through the call. But you have been doing handwriting analysis for how many years?
Well, let's see. I first got interested in it when I heard a woman, not with Handwriting University, but another Texan on a local radio station here in Dallas. And she was taking phone calls from listeners, and I really got interested in handwriting analysis through that. And I visited her website, and she had a link to your website, and that's where I learned about the school and the conferences and so forth. So I started with the handwriting analysis side of it and then got interested in the forensic document examination side of it, and I'll be graduating from that program in October.
Excellent. So for many years you've been doing the different kinds of handwriting, obviously.
I was going to say I didn't really answer your question. That was probably 3 years ago, I guess, when I first got interested in the field.
And because you're a business person, you obviously have had some experience with hiring, kind of like me, because I run a business and have employees, it's impossible not to use it in the process of hiring people. How did you first decided this was such an amazing tool in the hiring process? Was there a particular story or event that you can recall?
Well, not specifically. I guess what got me interested in this part of it was I wanted to find a way to use handwriting analysis in the business world, and I wanted to find a practical application where I could help companies save money. From what I understand, overseas in Europe, there are many, many companies who employ a handwriting analyst to help them with the hiring process. It's starting to catch on in the U.S. It's not quite as prevalent yet, so I'm hoping to help move that along a little bit. I guess in reading some case studies, it really got my attention as to how effective handwriting analysis in hiring can be, and I just kind of took it from there.
Well, I've always had the best employees. In fact, if you meet the people that work with me at the conferences, people always just comment on how nice they are and how good-hearted and how that they're so loyal and they just work so hard, and including everywhere from our seminar manager, who's 22, up to, of course, Marianne, who you've talked to if you've ordered. And the reason all those people are so nice is A, I like to think I'm a nice person and that I build an organization like myself, but the truth is it's because I screen people from their handwriting. And if they don't pass the handwriting test, then they don't get an interview and they don't get tested. So I really am that harsh about it. Is it fair to be that hard rule of thumb, Gina? Is it that accurate that we can just pretty much rule people out if they don't pass the test?
I think in a number of cases you can rule people out very easily, especially given some of the specific traits that are red flags or or kind of dangerous signals. Another reason I wanted to get into this side of it is I used to work in for a company in a high turnover environment. It was a call center environment. And people would get hired, then they had to sit through 2 weeks of training, and they went into a little messing period on the floor, if you will. And there was a lot of turnover, and the HR people were always harping on, you know, it costs us $5,000 to advertise and recruit and hire and train, and then if they leave in the first 30 or 60 or 90 days, we're losing a bunch of money. So I saw this as a way to really help keep those numbers down, if you will, and try to hire the right people in the beginning instead of waiting to see when they're in training whether or not they're going to work out or not.
Got it. Sorry, I got lost there for half a second. Excuse me. What do you think the process is for somebody that doesn't know handwriting at all, like somebody brand new, to being as good as you are to be able to spot the wrong employees? Is it going to take a year of training? Do they have to get certified? Or is the information, like in the deck of cards, good enough for them to get a clue?
Is the information, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last of that.
Like if someone just says, I don't want to spend the whole time learning all the advanced stuff, which of course is where the real nitty-gritty comes in, and that's the really juicy stuff. Can you make a hiring decision, or can you at least get a clue from some of the basics, like the handwriting 101 course, like the basic stuff? Or do you have to have your level of training?
I think you can get some good information from the basic course. Obviously, the more training you have, the more accurate you'll be. But even just with using the Grapho deck and coming to a conference or listening to one of these calls or whatnot, people can get a pretty good idea of how this works.
I mean, I think that even, like, we're going to go over some simple single stroke, which I now call the basic strokes. And those basic strokes, if you see them, they're still accurate. And if you see a lying loop or you see a T-bar that's, you know, pointed down as a domineering T-bar, that's still part of the personality. And so for me, even someone with limited knowledge, I think it just adds an asset to the whole hiring process rather than a detriment. I guess the only thing is if you don't know how to stack the traits, you don't know what offsets, you might go, ooh, I see a bad trait. I wonder if that's a pervasive part of the personality. And if you're not trained, you may just go, okay, it's a bad trait, throw the person away. And I guess that's when you turn a question into sort of an interview process. And so many of the things, if I see a clue, let's say I see one trait which I think is bad, but it's not anywhere else, like one downturn, why, we'll get to that. I would probably turn that into an interview question and have them talk about some experiences where they failed, they've been with companies that didn't make it, and really kind of flesh out whether that one stroke is significant, or just a minor part of their personality. And so I guess the question, I agree with you, it's very useful no matter whatever level you're on. And, of course, the more accurate and the more advanced you can do, clearly you're going to get a better picture.
Absolutely.
Now, there was a PDF that you had, and we're going to kind of look through this. So if you have the PDF, go ahead and take it out and look at it. If you don't have the PDF, let me tell you where it is online today as we speak live. If you're listening to this via a recording, then it'll probably be in the same location when you listen to this recording. So if you don't have it, it's simply at the following URL. It was henryuniversity.com/preview/register_thanks.html. So it's basically the thank you page that you registered right there under Gina's picture. Then you've got a little click that says pick PDF file. Now, in assembling this, Gina, you're giving a presentation in Dallas. I believe your presentation is on Sunday, if I'm correct.
Yes.
That might be on Saturday. Is this the exact same presentation, or is this sort of a Cliff Notes version of what you're going to be presenting in more detail with more handouts?
It would be the latter, kind of a Cliff Notes version. We're going to talk about, we're just going to touch on some of the same things that we'll be going over at the conference.
Got it. And, of course, a little bit more detail when we have more time on the conference and we've got the handouts. Because one thing with the conference, even if you get the DVDs of the conference, you don't attend, you'll get the same manual. So all the handouts that we go over, all the overhead projections are sort of in that manual. So you can look at the handwriting up close and personal. Because I know on these conference calls sometimes I talk quickly and you talk quickly and you want to hit rewind. So it's good to have the manual in front of you. So let's go through this, first of all. Oh, I also want to say one cool thing of business. At the end of this call, We'll be giving the last magic word, which we're giving away three home study courses. So if you want to write that down, that'll be about 10 minutes till, as well as we'll also give you a URL where you can get enrolled to the seminar at last month's prices, which is not only about $100 savings, but you can also get last year's DVDs as a bonus. And I believe that's still on there at the preview/super page. So you've got the ability to enroll in that. So we'll give you those URLs toward the end of the seminar, so it gives you a reason to hang on. And if it doesn't do a take, I'll see the reason to hang on besides what we're going to go through. So, Gina, tell me about this PDF file. We're looking at number one. People that ask me questions about training tend to be self-conscious because they're afraid that it might be illegal to analyze somebody's writing for employees. And the second question is, hey, how do you get a handwriting sample in a job interview? How do you handle those questions?
Well, first of all, it's definitely not illegal to analyze someone's handwriting. Obviously, handwriting is, if they're giving it to you in an interview, it's a public document and so forth. And sometimes it is hard in the hiring process to get a handwriting sample. I came up with some interesting ways that you can get handwriting samples if you're hiring someone. First would be the standard application for employment. I know a lot of people these days will type those. They'll fill it out on their PC and print it off. One way to get around that is to have the applicant come into your office, hand them an application and a pen, have them sit down, fill it out, sign it, and then you've got somewhat of a sample to look at. That's one way. Another way, and obviously these depend on what type of position you're hiring for, and I wrote down here dictation, and that wasn't really the word I was looking for. I was looking for more of an essay-type question during an interview process. I've had a couple of interviews where they've provided me a worksheet with several questions on it, and they give me 30 minutes to answer them with a pen. In kind of an essay format. For example, if you're at an interview and one of the questions that's used either verbally or on paper is, you know, the best question is, why should I hire you? So you've got somebody sitting there and you hand them a sheet of paper and say, you know, you've got 30 minutes. Give it your best shot. Write down why you're the right one for the job. Then you get a really nice sample of handwriting because they've got lots of time to write. They're trying to make a good impression. I think you'd get a lot of good information doing it that way, not just in content, but also in handwriting.
And also that point, they're fixated on what they're writing, not necessarily how they're writing.
Exactly. They're concerned with the content. They're not paying attention necessarily to the physical aspect of handwriting.
Got it. And do you find that that's misleading by telling them they're analyzed, or do you not tell them? How do you inform them or not inform them? What's your opinion?
Inform them of
the fact that you might use their handwriting to analyze it rather than just answer the question. Do you inform them of that?
No, I haven't. I think people do it numerous ways. I typically do not inform them ahead of time because some people might try to disguise their writing or write differently. Not that they would know necessarily what we're looking for, but you might not get as accurate a sample if you inform them ahead of time.
Yeah, I think it adds another layer of self-consciousness
mm-hmm.
in addition to the question of why should I hire you, which is, of course, foreboding enough for most people.
Right.
So I agree. Right. And you don't have to tell them. There's no law that says you have to tell them that you're even doing it at all. I actually do tell them. Of course, the nature of some of my businesses is handwriting. But they're really into it. Hey, what does it say?
And
if they have nothing to hide, they're usually curious.
Well, sure. And if they're applying for a job with you, given your company, That's
right.
The standard question that people would ask. Hey, are you going to look at my handwriting? Whereas in the rest of the world, that obviously doesn't come up. The third way that I've seen where handwriting is typically left is in the training process. Now, of course, this is after you've hired someone, but it still would be caught early enough in the employment history where it could save companies some money. And this is when employees go through a formal training period and they're asked to either take notes or they have quizzes that have to be turned in during training. Once again, I'm going back to my call center background where the training was 2 weeks and there were a lot of notes taken, a lot of quizzes they had to pass. And so the trainers could gather information that way. and turn it over to someone in HR or a handwriting analyst or whatever to view their handwriting that they've put forth during the training process.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that handwriting is very popular as a training, as a screening tool in France, and I think Israel is also highly used and pretty commonplace. It is popular in America, you were saying, but do you know how popular it is? Like, is the average company going to use it, or is it more of a tool that you just don't know if it's being used or not? Do you have any numbers to support and where it's being used and in what situations?
The only statistics that I've run across say that in the European countries that it's more than 50% of companies use handwriting analysis as a hiring tool. I believe in the U.S., and I can't remember where I read this, it's much lower, maybe 20%. My guess is it's a little less than that. You may have some better numbers than I do.
Yeah, I don't have any hard numbers. The last numbers I saw was an 88 Wall Street Journal talking about 85% of the French companies, which I think is a little high. I was in France back in 89 or 90, and I interviewed the people, and you're right, it's a very common practice over there. And graphology, of course, the French and the Germans were the pioneers of graphology in the late 1900s. Here, I just don't know how to track that. You know, it's not advertised that they do it. I know a lot of our graduates do work for companies, but sure not to the point of 20% of all the employments that they go through the hands. I think for most people, I know that a lot of our students are in HR, they're psychologists, psychiatrists, or they're people looking for small, you know, jobs, want to be their own boss, part-time consultants. They definitely can find business. I mean, it's out there because everyone has a huge problem, and you quantified it very nicely. And you said, hey, every one employee costs us thousands of dollars, not only to hire the wrong person, but then in retraining costs. So it's not a hard sales pitch if you're looking to do this for people as an employee, as employees and a consultant. As far as, you know, whether you're using it in your own business, hey, if you're ever hiring anybody or ever dating anybody, you should definitely use this. And I think the next section talks about some of the red flags, which even if you're not skilled, meaning you don't have the advanced level material or certification, you could still see these red flags and you could avoid them.
And sure, and just to give you another example of how I use it, my husband and I own a real estate brokerage, and in going through the forensic document examination course, a lot of the cases that we do are around real estate, and they're around deeds of trust. A lot of them are around wills and so forth, but there's also contracts that are signed between tenants and landlords and all kinds of things that go on in the real estate world where handwriting can be used. And, for example, if you own a home that you're going to rent out, I would highly recommend looking at a prospective tenant's handwriting before you decide if you're going to let this person live in your house or not. So it's come in handy that way as well, just as another example. The red flags that we have here on the handout, the first one is called the fear of success why. And if you're in the business world and you're hiring employees, I don't think you would want to hire people who are afraid to succeed. Obviously, you want to hire people who will be successful, which will in turn make you successful. Excuse me. As you can see from, or those of you who have the PDF can take a look at this, the fear of success why is shown by a downturned loop where as you come with your downstrokes on the Y and you come back up to make a loop, instead of ending on an upstroke, it turns downward. And that is typically how this trait is shown in the Y, and it's the same with the G as well. Typically what happens when someone has this trait in their handwriting is they want to succeed, they feel like they want to succeed, they work towards success, and then right before they get there, they get really close to success, and then they do something to sabotage themselves to prevent that success from happening. And it seems like I initially had this trait in my handwriting, unless I was printing, and then I had just a straight downstroke. But if I was writing in cursive, and this was years ago, I had this, And when I first got the Grapho deck and looked at it, I thought, well, how silly. Everybody wants to succeed, you know, on a certain level, on a conscious level. In your subconscious, there may be something that's happened to you in the past that is keeping you from succeeding. And that's where this shows up in the handwriting. So that's the first one.
Now, let me ask you on that one. The first success. Now, this is what you call a red flag. And that just means these are trouble, right? I mean, that's just possibility of a no hire or trouble trait.
Yes, I wouldn't find this one trait and automatically say, okay, you're out, like you mentioned earlier. You need to learn how to stack your traits and look at the other traits that may offset this and so forth. I don't think anyone should ever make a decision based on one specific trait, but this is a red flag trait. You are correct.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also on this particular trait, in fact, both this and the one below it, 99% of the time I've seen it, it's been trouble. So I will give us the possibility of it being a little bit less than bad, but the fear of success, if it's consistent, if it's mold, if it's really, you know, noticeable, not one downturn why in 100 whys, but if it's every time and it's significant, you know, I've never seen it turn out good. And one story comes to mind, this woman who was applying for a job said that, you know, that trait's really right. I've never made a company go broke, but two of them that I've worked for lately went bankrupt. And you think, well, how is it that you put two companies up bankrupt? Well, I guess unconsciously she's choosing ships that are sinking.
Right.
So clearly, you know, there's something like attracts like. So she obviously wasn't the cause of a demise of some big company. But that issue was part of her character, and only from seeing in the writing that was part of her character did we flesh out her issues with the past companies and what her role in that would be. And one of the interesting things about that trait is that these people really – as we talked to their previous bosses, they say, you know, they worked harder than everybody. They were here late. They got up early. They really pretended to work really hard. It's almost like getting a really running start before you trip and fall at the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
They really put on a good show. And their bosses will sometimes say, I don't understand it. It didn't make any sense. He was doing so good. He was so close. He was almost the best salesman. And then it didn't work out. So it almost runs out of steam at really inappropriate times.
That's very true.
But if you have it here and you're listening and you've got this trait, then you want to change it because you can change it. And if you don't have it, then you should feel blessed because it's one of the biggies that you have to work on. And once you hit that and cure it, then your life is a whole lot easier.
And
so, Gina, let me open the phones up. Okay, go ahead.
Sure. I was just going to say, I've definitely learned to change mine, and I will not have this trait in my handwriting again. So you can change it if you do have it.
You do have that. And I've opened up the news. If you have any questions for what we talked about, we'll also get to Q&A toward the end of the phone call. Just to say your name and take yourself off mute, and then you can interact with us now.
Good evening.
Hello. What's your name?
My name is Ruthie.
Hi, Ruthie. You have a question for Gina?
How you doing? Yes, I do. In the past, I, too, am a certified handwriting analyst through Bart's class. And in the past, I had the Y that went in the opposite direction. I'm starting to wonder, you know, where it goes into the upside-down arc going to the past.
Yeah.
I'm wondering whether or not that's also a hindrance for future endeavors, too. In other words, is that another way of having a failure because you're not really going toward the future?
Well, I would say someone with a Y or a G that does that, I would say it's somewhat of a red flag simply because that person is so focused on the past. They're not looking to the future, which especially if you're trying to build a company or you're somewhat entrepreneurial, I would think that would hinder you as an employee to have that trait.
Okay.
My opinion, Ruthie, based on what I'm especially researching lately in advanced traits, is that all the traits are made up of strokes, and it's a similar stroke to fear of success. So your logic is, well, it might be a derivation of it. I rarely see that trait, which means that we don't have a lot of research to validate that it means the same or something different.
Okay.
But the stroke is very similar, and it goes into the past, and it turns down. So there is dejection.
Yes.
There is a little bit of failure thing going on, and it goes in the past, which relates to guilt and unresolved issues. So if any situation, it doesn't sound positive. So I think you would change it, even though that I can't say with 100% certainty that it's the same trait.
But I've noticed the difference because of the change. Because I have changed it, I've noticed the difference. That's why I'm bringing that up.
Nice. Okay, great. Good. Have you changed anything else in your writing and noticed the difference in either your
own? Oh, absolutely. The D, you know, the loop in the D.
Uh-huh.
The fear of criticism, sensitivity to criticism. Absolutely. Closing the D and the T has helped me tremendously to progress, to not, because people hold back because of their fear more than anything. If they eliminate that fear, they continue to advance, and that's what happened with me. I'm still advancing, and I've got a better attitude toward things as a result of that.
Nice. And I've talked to Ruthie a number of times on our teleconference about the years, and I have noticed you being more successful and more optimistic and basically even making better decisions in your job and stuff. So good job.
Thank you.
And I agree with Bart as well that particular trait of having the Y end toward the left and down is very unusual. I've only seen it a couple of times in looking at random samples. So it is an unusual trait.
Good.
Did somebody else have a question?
Yeah, I do. I'm Cindy from Illinois.
Hi, Cindy.
Are you guys talking about what I've read in books as called the felon's claw Y?
No.
Or is it something different?
Go ahead, Gina.
The felon's claw Y, if it goes back to the left and it hooks and it ends on the downstroke, that's considered a felon's claw, isn't it, Bart?
Usually, it could be in the baseline. I can see the confusion because there is an arch to it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Y we're talking about, there's no V shape whatsoever. It's a normal Y that comes up at the baseline and it makes a U-turn as the car is turning right and going back down towards south. The felon's claw tends to be a Y that actually makes a V shape and then goes back to the left.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought she was referring to Ruth's Y that goes back to the left.
Well, she might be, but in my mind, Ruth's Y was also smooth looped and just kind of an inverse loop.
Wow.
Maybe, Ruthie, we didn't explain that very well.
No, but you're absolutely right, Bart. Mine is not like the arc where it shows signs of resentment.
Right.
Mine
so
just comes down
shape.
And just goes just up and goes down, like it makes an upside down ending, but it goes to the past, but it's not with that V like you would have with a felon's claw.
Got it. So I think the loop is reversed is what we're saying. Almost like
exactly.
The loop is on the side, yeah.
The
felon's claw also bad news. You just got the angles and vindictive and meanness and those are real covert people. You don't always see that coming, but it's there. If you get the felon's claw,
would that be considered a red flag? I am in HR and I do all the hiring for our company of 16 convenience stores, and I see the felon's claw why not real often, but fairly often. And when we hired with the felon's claw, before I learned what that stroke could mean, we had some real cases that really came back on us.
Yeah, I have only seen it a couple times in a personal situation, in a business situation, and I ended up suing that person because they're nice as heck up front. You just can't imagine, at least this person was, so nice. You just can't imagine that was real. And you look at the handwriting and go, well, it was there. No wonder there's such vindictive behavior later. And so I do think they justify, they blame, they don't take responsibility. It doesn't mean that they steal, doesn't mean that they're felons, but I think that there is some issues with ethics and some resistance with particularly blame and resentment. So it's mm-hmm. generally a very bad sign.
Yeah.
Isn't it true, too, they have an inner desire to retaliate?
I think retaliation is the key word. Yeah, absolutely right. Vindictive and retaliation. I think that would be fair. At least that's in my personal experience.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that trait, I guess fortunately, I don't have a lot of personal experience with it. From what the books say, it is retaliation and blame, which, of course, would lead to things like crime or punishment or, you know, hurting other people.
I have a question.
Good. Yeah, go ahead.
My why kind of used to, I changed it. It used to look like the fear of failure, but it went above the line,
uh-huh.
quite a bit above the line, and then went back down. But as soon as I saw that, I changed it. Now it doesn't do that. But
it's still best to change. According to this new dictionary I'm putting together, that is called dejection and or resignation. They also sometimes call that. And it's a feeling of dejection, a feeling of not complete, even though you make complete projects.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's associated with feelings of depression and or not completing things. Mm-hmm. So in generally, it's not a healthy trait, but it doesn't. I don't think it falls into the category of fear of success, which can be very, very detrimental.
Mm-hmm. Well, I changed it 6 months ago. So.
Good. Good. Again, that definitely would be a red flag for me because that distinction of being below the baseline or up is significant.
Mm-hmm.
But still, for your benefit, no reason to have a sense of dejection when you do something well. That's just not necessary.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay, good job. Okay, I'm going to put the music on. Okay, Gina, let's go on to number B. You had a couple more handling samples that you want to talk about, what you call red flags.
Sure. The second one is called lying loops. And once again, when you're hiring someone, not to mention in interpersonal relationships and so forth, lying is not a real positive trait that you'd want where you'd want to hire someone. As you can see here, if you have the handout, lying loops are shown by a combination of loops on the right and left sides of lowercase A's and O's. When you look at the graphic itself, you can see in the first one to the left, you can see three loops in there, one on each side and one in the middle. And then the second one has a loop on the left side and on the top. These are very rounded strokes, and there's loops everywhere. As it shows here on the grapho deck, a lot of times it's not that somebody is a vindictive liar. A lot of times they're just not comfortable in telling everything or telling the whole truth. They may give you bits and pieces of information. They may withhold some information. They may not think that's lying if what they've told you is the truth. But the fact of the matter is, if they are not telling the whole truth, that can be detrimental to your company or your business. The bigger the loops are in the letters, typically the bigger the lies are. This is a red flag. When hiring, obviously, you're not going to want to hire someone who either withholds the truth or tells outright lies just due to the problems that it can cause your company. So that's another red flag to look for.
Now, specifically, those of you that kind of knew the handwriting, let's talk about the O just for a second. Is there loops in the O that are acceptable? And what does it mean if there's no loops at all for people that are kind of beginning in this?
The other variations that I'm familiar with as to what you can tell about people from the O or the A is if you make your O without loops, that it's completely closed, that would indicate that the person is quiet, not nearly as talkative, they're more covert in their activities, whereas if they make an O or an A without a loop, but it's open at the top, that tends to signify that they're more talkative, more outgoing, maybe more open to new ideas, that kind of thing. Is there an O, Bart, with a loop that is accessible?
Sure. Any loop with an exit loop on the right means people are secretive. And I think secretive is something they teach in second grade as far as the writing style. So mild secretive, bluntness is acceptable. Self-deceit is even acceptable as far as not being a big red flag. I definitely rather people not have self-deceit.
Sure.
But the loop on the right is really common and I think very healthy, especially if you're in any kind of business where secrecy, money, privacy would be a concern. The other loop, which is really strange, which we didn't use here, is if it looks sort of like an upside-down U where the opening is at the bottom. That's usually a huge red flag as far as ethical considerations.
Hmm.
You just don't see it very much, which is why it's not in the basic courses.
But the secret, I agree with what you're saying. The secretive loop can be a positive trait depending on the work environment. If you work for an investment firm or a bank or any kind of job where you're dealing with confidential information,
mm-hmm.
Having that loop would be very beneficial. If you've got an employee who's very open and talkative and outgoing, having them trusted with confidential information may not be the best match.
True. And also talkative with talkativeness. Again, it's all about matching. And here's the thing we haven't really talked about is we're talking about the bad traits, but isn't it really about matching the job to the job profile?
Yes,
matching the handwriting to the job opposed to just saying good or bad?
Yes. Just the example you just gave was perfect. If you've got a job opening where you need someone outgoing and extroverted and talkative and so forth, the secretive may indicate that they're not right for that job. Whereas if you've, like we just said, if you're dealing with confidential information and things that need to be held close to the vest, having that secretive O may be beneficial. So you're exactly right. It's trying to find the right match employee for the right job as opposed to just looking at the trait and saying this is good or this is bad, because obviously the traits can be beneficial dependent on the job that you're hiring for. So that's very true.
Good. And before I move on the lying loops, I have only found two examples in the 20 years I've done handwriting where the lying loops were in somebody's writing and I didn't really find the person to be a liar. And in both situations, there are women in their early 60s or late 50s. They have DE slant, and they had a really, really legible writing. Every other part of the personality, including the self-image, was fantastic. And I can't really say that the trait was accurate, being a liar, as much as they were really, really diplomatic to people, and they didn't want to hurt people's feelings. So, you know, again, there are a few exceptions, but realize that they're few and far between.
True. The third one we have listed here is procrastination. And I'm not sure I can think of any job where you would want to hire someone who procrastinates. The only time that I think this could really work out in your favor, well, not necessarily in your favor, but where it wouldn't be a problem is having been to college, I know I had a lot of friends who waited until the last minute to get an assignment done, whether it was doing a research paper or putting together something on a project or whatnot, and that's how they worked the best when they were under pressure and they had to get it done. They would wait till the last minute, but they would go do it, and they would do it well, and it would be done on time. Personally, I did not work that way. I like to, you know, kind of pace myself, go at my own pace, take my time, make sure it's all right, but there are people who do that. So if you have an employee who does that, but they do a really good job and it's always done on time, you know, maybe that's, if their final product is higher quality than someone who does not procrastinate, it may be okay to have that person. But as a general rule, I don't think procrastination is a trait that most people would want to have in an employee.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
As you can see from the example here, procrastination is shown when the T-bar crosses the stem on the left side. The T-bar, for those of you who are not familiar, is just the stroke that you cross the T with. I guess if you're writing very slowly, you can probably get it half on each side, but usually when people are writing fast and not thinking about their writing, they'll typically cross that T where it will be totally on the left or mostly on the left. Sometimes it's on the left and doesn't even touch the stem, or it's the opposite where it's on the right side of the stem. The procrastination is shown on the left side of the stem, and it's often a sign of laziness in people. Once again, hiring lazy employees would not really be at the top of my list. But the T is such an interesting letter because the different parts of the T can depict so many different aspects of someone's personality. You just happen to pick procrastination here as being a red flag when hiring someone. But the T is really a very interesting letter to study, and it's an interesting thing to look at when you're looking at someone's handwriting sample.
That's great. So let me recap here. You had three red flags. Obviously, there's a few more of that. You got the fear of success, which is in the downhill Y. The lying loop, which, of course, is prevarication, and procrastination, which is a T-bar on the left side of the stem. One of the questions that somebody emailed in, this is Donna, I'm not sure where Donna's from, she says, what's the three most important letters to look at? in evaluating possible employees, which is a great question because you're not just asking what are the most important traits, but is there certain letters that you really want to see those letters when you're doing an employee? I think you just mentioned one of them.
Wow, that is a very good question. I would have to say the T would definitely be one of them.
Lowercase T, correct?
Lowercase T, yes, very much so. Let me give it some thought here. As far as
I think the T has more significance than anything. The name is always handy to look at because you've got the ego and self-image issues surrounding the size of the name.
The signature?
Yeah, signature, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the O's and the A's, the middle zones, those are honesty. I also like to look at the M's and how the entire hammering is formed in relationship to the spacing, and especially the M's, if they're very rounded, if they're very slow, if they're mechanical, if they're fluid, if they got points on the M's and N's, those are all some of the thinking processes, and that's real important to get the right person the job, because you can't put a really procedural thinker in most CEO-type positions. I have seen a few, but in general, the faster the thinker, the more sort of analytical job, like engineer, where the more procedural and creative, perhaps the procedurals are much more useful, including supportive, like a teacher, so team player, those sort of things. You get the more rounded tops, ends, and the baselines and garlands, and those tend to be a little bit more of team players. Again, generalities, I think as you get used to it, and the question also begets just three letters. Well, obviously you want to look at whatever jumps out at you off the page. But those are my choices, M's, O's, and T's. That would be my vote for that question.
And also the capital M shows diplomacy, depending on which hump is higher than the other.
Right.
So if you have a job where you've got an employee that is going to be dealing with foreign dignitaries, or they're going to be dealing with lots of upper management, or any number of things where they must be very diplomatic, both in written and verbal form or whatnot, very important to have to look at that capital M for that trait as well. So I would agree that that's an important one.
Great. All right, let me open the phones. We have another 10, 15 phone calls here. We're going to get to sample number 3 in just a second, and then section 4 is approaching upper management. Any other quick questions here before we move on to sample 3, which is which one would you hire as an A, B, and C, which we can definitely do as a group, or we talk about it?
Yes. To go back to procrastination, this is Ruthie. When you had mentioned about the T-bar being a procrastinator, but the T-bar is high, it kind of falls into the same category as you were mentioning in reference to people who are trying to do things in the last minute. Am I correct to say, or incorrect to say, that if the T-bar was low, now we're talking low self-esteem with procrastination, now we really have a dangerous situation. Am I correct or not?
You are very correct.
Okay.
Very correct. For those of you who haven't learned about the lowercase T yet, if the T bar is crossed low on the stem, that's a sign of low self-esteem, which obviously is not a good trait. But if you pair that then with procrastination, then that is definitely a red flag for sure.
Ruthie, I'm going to invite you to speak at my next advanced conference. That's pretty smart.
Thank you.
Will you be joining us in Dallas?
No, I wish I could. I'm going to be getting the DVD, so.
Excellent. Well, you are going to die when you see all this advanced stuff that I've come up with, of a similar five or six really complicated, confusing books from the 60s and 70s trying to make it easy to understand, because it can be real complicated. There's only so many variables, like a huge canvas of paint. And you keep putting different colors on there and get different images, different colors, and you have to know how to combine them. So I think I've made it really simple as could be, but Ruthie, you're going to dig it when you finally put those DVDs in your player in August.
I'm excited about that. Bart, I want you to know that next spring I'm going to be in a business seminar. I mean, in a business expo. I had put in for have a booth in a business expo so I can incorporate the ability to be able to analyze for human resources, you know.
Good. Well, you are certified. You should be making a lot of extra money with this for sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Also, another bonus session we're going to do, which has not been advertised, I'm going to give a session in Dallas, which will be on your DVDs, about how anyone with an interest in handwriting can make an extra $300 or $400 a month just by blogging on the internet, like on the internet, writing articles, writing their feedback, sort of talking about your stories that you're using in that, and we'll show you how you can use our affiliate professor program to start getting
awesome
of our business model. So
that
yeah,
is
I mean,
awesome.
You don't have to have a big website. You just have to be able to blog and kind of, you know, be interactive, because now that we have the top 4 or 5 websites in the world, we can all interact, and if we sell things to our customers that you lead us, then we'll give you a check for 20%. So you'll dig that routine.
Wow, that's great.
Gotta like making money. Why not? I think we should share.
You got it.
Good. Okay, let me, Ruthie, thank you for your comments. Let's go to number 3 and 4 so we can make sure we get all the things covered before we go to a question. Which one do you hire? You got 3 samples of handwriting. Now, I guess the question back to you is, this question can't be answered until you tell me, Gina, what's the position? Am I correct?
Yes, and this particular case is, well, I agree with that somewhat. One of these people I wouldn't hire for any position, but for the most part, yes, you're trying to match the right person to the right position. This particular sample was from some applicants for an accounting position.
Oh, wow, accounting.
Okay.
Now, let's make some assumptions here. I've never been an accountant, but I work with a couple. And there are some accountant meaning account supervisor, or someone who sits in a computer by themselves all day. Let's talk what kind.
I would say someone who does the nitty-gritty, down-and-dirty calculations of accounting.
So someone who sits alone working with pencil, books, or computer,
yes,
processing numbers.
Correct.
So they're not the one selling the accounting account and wheeling and dealing over lunch, getting accounting contracts. They're the guy doing the accounting.
Correct.
Okay, and that does make a difference, because you'll find extroverts in accounting jobs, but they don't really do accounting anymore. They sell the services and they have an accounting degree. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, well, so anyone, Ruthie, I know you know the answer to this. So which one would you rule out based on what we already said?
Well, I would rule out definitely sample B, because it looks to me like they're an emotional basket case. I would definitely rule
out. Hold on, Ruthie. One at a time. Let's get everybody on here. Okay,
I'm
Ruthie,
sorry.
I've heard from you. Who else had a comment? I guess you're the only one who wants to answer, Ruthie. Maybe I have to go back to you.
And let me interject here. I didn't include it as a handout here, but one thing to keep in mind is, what if you only saw the signatures? Then you might not immediately rule out sample B. So it's
sure.
important. It's important that you get a paragraph or several sentences so you can really see the full extent of their handwriting, because for a lot of people, their signature is very different from the rest of their handwriting.
That's
so
right.
If you have someone who filled out an application and then, on the computer or whatnot, or typed it, and then all they did was sign their name, you wouldn't necessarily have an indicative sample of their personality. So once again, if you just had these 3 signatures, you might come up with a different opinion than having the whole sample. But you are correct. Sample B is one that I would not be involved with on any level.
Good, and I think the emotional confusion is very fair. Now, so I guess we asked a question now between sample C and A, which one matches what we briefly described? And I say briefly, there's a whole lot more inquiry I would always do with an employee manager or HR person. Would be more a post-accounting? Would it be number A or number C as far as emotionality? Any guesses?
I have a guess if you don't have an answer for anybody else.
I say A.
You say A. And why do you say A?
They look like they're neat, pretty level-headed. Their Y's don't go down. They don't really go up either. But sample C looks more like a wheeler and dealer to me, with the M's, the sharp M's, and the sharp N's.
Right. These are not really technical terms you've learned in the course, apparently. Wheeler-dealer I don't think is in the dictionary, but I like it. I like it. Gina, do you think that as far as that backwards handwriting, that's typical of an accountant compared to the frontward of the C? And how would you comment on her astute observation of the Y's in sample A?
I would agree that sample A would be the best candidate for an accounting position for a number of reasons, and it's not just the Y, but you are correct in that they don't really go up or down. A couple of things with sample A. You'll notice that the handwriting is very small. which is indicative of someone who can concentrate very well. They don't get distracted. They're able to sit and do their job and concentrate on it, which is the small handwriting. Also, the fact that the slant is a little bit to the left means that they are more introverted. They're not going to be the employee who's running around the office, gossiping, talking at the water cooler the whole time. Someone in an accounting position, to be successful, my guess is they need to be a little quieter, a little more introverted, and have the ability to concentrate and pay attention to detail to really do this job effectively. So those are the few things in sample A that I think make them the best of the three candidates.
Can
good.
I
and I want to point out one thing is number C, very scattered thinking processes. You know, even though he does have focus, the M's and N's aren't consistent. The M's are analytical but not real focused. I mean, you do have, for me, a concern with not necessarily drug usage, which obviously could be one of those, but very, very unfocused and I guess a scattered word is what I'm seeing there. Typically not your calm and centered, backwards sort of writing like an introvert number A. And I do have to point out a good thing, Gina. You're correct. Of those three samples, A fits the profile better, but I'm not happy with that Y being turned down once out of the four times, maybe twice. I definitely want to investigate and see if that trait would have an effect on the job. So, you know, sometimes the answer is not any of them, but in this case, A would be more of the profile than the other two.
Well, Bart? Hello, Bart?
Yes, ma'am.
Considering that you do see some of those Ys the way they are, would you also take into consideration that he succeeded at passing his CPA exam because he is actually applying for a CPA position?
No, I wouldn't, because I've been fooled too many times by people's degrees on the wall and the fact that some people can finish 15 degrees and be a PhD and not know how to fix their car, you know, put gas in their car.
Oh, no.
Seriously, to me, degrees are not a sign of success. They're a degree of being complete certain things with structure. So I don't get fooled by their degrees. If they've got the why, I think it could be a problem emotionally.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty harsh, but that's what I think.
Bart?
Yes, ma'am.
My question on that is, you would notice he's writing, he's a perfectionist because he writes so straight, and he's persistent. These two traits alone could probably compensate for the loss in the why. Am I correct about saying that or not?
What's the location?
I'm going to put you on hold, Julie.
Okay.
I muted the, you guys out because we had somebody else talking. The answer was, does it compensate for the why? No. The fear of success is a very big fear. I don't know if it's there all the time because I only have two samples or two examples of the why, but the only thing that's going to compensate for fear of success would be power traits such as enthusiasm, high self-image, determination. These traits, which are success traits, those would push it past. Not necessarily introvert or extroversion. So fears would not offset another fear. Only success traits would offset another success trait. So good observation. Gina, I want you to give me your answer, but first I have to give something. I told people at the 50-minute mark, which is now, we'd be giving the magic word, which we're giving away three home study courses worth an average of $800 each. And if you've been listening to all the calls or listening to it on tape, this is the time you're going to write this word down. The final word in the series is trabajo. Now, this is Spanish for the word work. Do you know that word, Gina?
I sure do.
Trabajo, and it's spelled T-R-A-B-A-J-O. I know it's sneaky to use Spanish, but that means you had to be listening because you couldn't guess. If you are listening and you want to enter the contest, we did have about 100 people in each call. We don't know if everyone's written all of them down and to be on all the calls. We did lose Dr. Joe's call, so you know, you kind of have an extra word if you heard that. We won't hold it against you because we couldn't tape it. We will be posting the URL where you enter those into the URL. So that'll be coming up on Monday, so watch your emails. Collect all nine and enter them in the contest. If we only have three entries, you all win. But if we got 10 or 15, we'll just take, you know, we'll take those 10 or 15 right entries or 50, and we'll pick three to win the prize. Also, before you get to that last question, Gina, the URL that they need to go to if they want to come join us in Texas is the following. It is handwritinguniversity.com/preview/super, S-U-P-E-R, HandwritingUniversity.com/preview/super. This actually has a May 25th date on it. We do have two more tickets at this offer left, which means not only can you bring a friend for free but you get last month's price at $497, and you get last month's DVD. It's about $1,200 worth of bonuses. There's only two of those left. It's only because you were kind enough to join Gene and I on the conference call that you even know about this URL. So if you haven't come to the, if you haven't signed up for the conference, please do. You have a week. Here it is again, hammeruniversity.com/preview/super. That's S-U-P-E-R. If you're listening to this via tape or via recording, obviously this URL will not be up and not be active. And the conference will probably be over because it'll be after the conference call. Okay, so there's my plugs for the different opportunities to meet us there in Dallas, Gina. Tell us the answer. You had, you decided answer A was
yes,
what you decided.
I did. I wanted to point out something about sample C, though. A couple of red flags that I see. And one is there are a couple of samples where the T-bar is down, is pointed down, which is indicative of a very domineering personality. Also, there are lots of angles and lots of points. It almost looks like the teeth of a saw, if you just kind of glance at the writing. To me, it looks like somebody who, when provoked, could just explode at any moment. Just a couple of things to look at in that sample. Yes, it's indicative of someone more outgoing, and yes, they could be doing the sales side, but there are also those other things that would concern me in that particular sample.
Excellent. Good wrap-up there. Now, number four, just so we can finish up. You had number four. I told you we would probably run right up to the clock, didn't I?
You did.
She's like, oh, I don't know if we have enough material. I'm going to have to jump into my stuff I'm doing at Dallas, and trust me, I have plenty of stuff. Approaching upper management. If you want to do this for money, I charge a little more than the average person, but you could probably charge $100 an hour. And how do you approach them? How do you approach them to say, hey, I want to do this for our company? What do you do?
Well, there are a couple of things, and I added something here that's not on the handout, which is just very basic, the reasons to use handwriting analysis in the business world. And it's not just in hiring. It is also very helpful with problems like theft, which costs companies billions of dollars annually. Also, if you're pairing employees to work on a project together or you're putting teams together, those work relationship type things, handwriting analysis is very helpful. So I just wanted to add that into this presentation as for other reasons that you might use handwriting analysis in the business world. Now, as far as approaching upper management, here are my suggestions. I don't think you can just walk into the CEO and say, hey, by the way, I analyze handwriting. I think I can save you some money. You can tell personality traits through handwriting, and, you know, I think you really need to hire me as a consultant for this. I think you've got to be more prepared than that, because I think, especially in the U.S., you might get some pushback because it's not as prevalent here as it is elsewhere. My first suggestion would be to gather your evidence, meaning if you're in an HR role and you're privy to information when employees are terminated, take those claims to the upper management. Say, here are five examples of when employees were terminated, what they were terminated for, and samples of their handwriting where you can say, had I seen this prior to the person being hired, this specific trait, they would not have been hired, and thus, you know, we wouldn't have to go replace them and spend the money on them. I think if you have concrete evidence, that will certainly better your position. The other thing I would add to that is take some case studies. Find, I'm sure they're online. I have not personally looked myself. My guess is there are books out there, whether they're European companies, U.S. companies, or whatnot. But take some case studies that show where other companies have used handwriting analysis successfully, what they have used it for, the amount of money it saved them, whatnot. So once again, you have something concrete to show upper management. The last thing in the short time that we have left that I would suggest is, as I mentioned earlier, to be prepared for pushback. You may have somebody who says, you know, you're crazy. I don't believe a word of what you're saying. You know, go back and do your normal job. You may have someone more receptive. Then again, you may not. But if you do get the pushback, my suggestion would be is to continue compiling your evidence and keep track of the cost to the company. Because one thing upper management and a CEO will understand is bottom line cost. And if you can go back repeatedly and show the evidence that you've gathered and put a dollar figure to it, you will get someone's attention. Those are the things that I would do in approaching upper management.
Nicely done. I agree. Okay, I just realized one more detail, and then I will ask Jay to stop recording, and then we'll also hang around for a couple final questions and stuff. I want to respect the people that have to get off at the top of the hour. I realize that there is one more thing. A lot of people on the phone call may not can get to Dallas. I know it's one week away. If you want to go but you can't go, order the DVDs at time. On that page that I talked about 2-for-1 special, there is a $2.97 offer for the DVDs and the CDs and the entire manual. So go ahead and go there. So even if you can't get down to Texas, go ahead and pre-order those, because as soon as we start the conference, that'll go up to a $500 to $600 mark. It's handwritinguniversity.com/preview/super. And Gina, I thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us tonight. I can't wait to hear the whole presentation at the conference.
Not like he was before.
Great. Okay, we took you off mute. Gina, we've opened up for a couple questions. We are at top of the hour, so if you have a question, now's the time to do it.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead.
When someone has the liar's loop on both sides but it's open in the middle, it doesn't cross, what does that mean?
Uh-huh. Gina?
Wow. In my recollection, it's a combination of having the lying loops on both sides, but it's open at the top, so they're not very secretive. They're very verbose and outspoken and whatnot, which to me could be dangerous if they have lying loops as well. That means they're probably prevalent to more lying than an average lying loop would show. Is that accurate, Mark?
Well, I've only seen a couple times. A, it is both traits. It's lying and it's talkative.
Mm-hmm.
You've got someone that lies and forgets who they told it to and then gets themselves stuck in the fact they got caught in telling a lie because they forgot who they lied to. And I have also seen this in books referred to as, quote, a pathological liar, meaning someone who lies excessively and sort of gets caught. I don't think it's pathological. I think the example that you used in the handouts were more pathological with the big double loops in the middle. But in any case, you do have talkative. You do have prevarication or white lies. If the loops are really tiny, it's not so much pathological as much as a white lie. So, again, in all cases, a problem, at least if somebody's talkative and lying, you'll probably catch them. That's handy. Okay, let me pull you back up.
Anybody
all right, everybody.
Question?
One more question. If you got one.
You mentioned about a presentation. If you were to make a presentation on a cold call, trying to get somebody going, not a company you work for, but just to get on to human resources, how would I approach a person?
I would, once again, with the same information, obviously you're not there to show them
right.
in person, but verbally, I think money talks. And I think if you get someone on the phone and you say, I can save your company, however, whatever the amount is.
Put the volume down.
In regards to hiring and recruiting and training and so forth, I can save your company money if you'll give me, 30 minutes to meet with you. I can show you how this is done in concrete detail.
Good. And it's like any cold call. Hey, I need a few minutes of your time. I want to talk about, saving some money hiring. Yeah, the first point of any phone call is to make an appointment. If you can get in the appointment, then you can definitely get to see them. And then, of course, your presentation has to be really tight and the first presentation I ever did on handwriting, I didn't actually know how much money I was charging. He goes, well, okay, great, I love it. How much is it? And I went, I don't know. I was 19. I didn't know how much I charged.
I have
a price in mind.
Bart's right. Your only objective on a phone call is to get an appointment. You don't want to try to sell this service over the phone because you won't be as successful. But if you can hook them in and get the appointment, then you've got a chance to build rapport, you've got a chance to show them some things face-to-face, one-on-one, and you'll be far more successful.
Yeah, I agree. Gina, you did not mention your website. I think people might want to get a hold of you and learn more about you. Give us a little plug there.
Oh, definitely. It is www.prodocumentexaminer.com.
Repeat that, please.
www.prodocumentexaminer.com.
Good. Well, thank you for your time. Any other final remarks or closing comments to these fine people of A, why they should be at the seminar, and B, why they should master the science?
You know, what can I say? The first seminar I went to was in Washington, D.C., and I've been hooked ever since, not just for this aspect of it and hiring and so forth, but if you come to the conference, you'll hear many speakers on many topics, and you will learn so much, and it will help you not only in business but personally, in all kinds of interpersonal relationships, and it's just a wealth of information that can help you in a lot of ways. I appreciate everybody taking the time to listen, and certainly if you have any questions, my email address is on my website. Feel free to take a look, and I will certainly get back with you.
Great. All right, Gina, we're going to take a night now. Thank you, everybody, and we will see you in Dallas. And if you don't see you in Dallas, you'll see us on the DVDs and CDs. So, Gina, you have a great night, and everyone else do too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.